This episode of the Fastest Known Podcast is brought to you by Koros. Wearables from Koros help you explore perfection by offering the longest battery life in its class for each of its watch models. For example, in full GPS mode, you get 60 hours of battery life. That's as much as the current FKT on Nolan's 14. Or track in ultra mode to get an astonishing 150 hours of battery life, enough to get an FKT on Vermont's Long Trail and then some. Koros is proudly worn by many great runners, including Camille Herron, Timothy Olsen, Hayden Hawks, Magdalena Boulay, and many others. Track your next FKT with a watch from Koros. Visit koros.com, C-O-R-O-S.com.
Back we are with the Fastest Known Podcast, where for 30 minutes, sometimes more, we talk with some of the most interesting people in the sport. And this week, we're going to continue with our topics theme. We have brought back Jared Campbell from a previous episode, and Welcome, Jared. It's really good to talk with you again.
Thanks, Buzz. Always fun to be on your podcast and always fun to be chatting with you.
So what are we talking about this time? Now, last time, of course, we ran out of time because we spent 20 minutes just on your bio. Well, I'm just kidding about that because, like most good runners, you don't want to talk about yourself at all. And we're not going to do that this time. But we're going to continue this time with a more slightly softer topic discussion than we did last time. Last time we talked about how to approach the big project. And this time, what are we going to be talking about?
Well, I think this time we're going to dive into the topic of partnerships for projects. You know, something you and I have a bunch of experience with over the years, and probably something that gets overlooked and is worth, you know, reviewing and sharing with people, especially those kind of new to the sport of tackling projects outside of races. So the topic is partnerships.
That's good. And like you said, no one ever talks about this, even though it's very important. A few weeks ago, we had Bill Wright and Kyle Richardson, and the topic there was speed versus safety. And we discussed that we discussed three components of safety. And the first one is your mind. But the very second one was partnerships. Choose a good partner. So I like this topic, Jared.
Yeah, me too. You know, and as I reflect back on all the cool things I've had the pleasure to do over the years, the best ones are with people. And those people have become my best friends, and they really shape the experience. So I think it'll be fun to dive into this.
Okay. So what do you got? If someone is starting off here, or even if they're not starting off, what do you see as one of the first elements to start with for a good partner?
Well, I think for the podcast too, just to frame it for the listeners, kind of like the strategy one where we had some major points on the partnership one, I think it would be cool to dive into the process for partner selection, and then the communication associated with the upfront phase, like the planning, all the lead up work, which there's so much leading up to a big project. And then once you're in it, you know, once you're in the thick of the project and you're plugging along, you know, what are the components that apply to each of those phases? Selecting a partner, planning all the lead up work, the communication that goes into it, and then the execution phase.
All right. Three aspects of a good partner. Let's do it.
In preparation for this, I reached out to a number of my good friends that I've, you know, teamed up with over the years to tackle big things, you know, big things being like, you know, a day to 2 days or plus kind of thing. You know, people like Ty Draney, Luke Nelson, and Gary Robbins. It was fun to kind of relive, and Ryan McDermott, actually, who you and I have done a lot with, but relive some of the big projects of our past, those that have gone really well, and almost in a more entertaining fashion or more educational fashion as well, the things that didn't go well. And so I've tried to collect a few little things to maybe share with the listeners here. So, you know, it's funny. A lot of these things actually are, I think, second nature to those of us who have been tackling projects for years. You know, how we pick a partner, what we look for, is just sort of second nature. So I guess I'll just say that for your listeners to hear that I kind of share some of these thoughts with, you know, those who are just getting started. So let's dive into like the first one, which I would say is kind of probably fairly obvious, but having complementary skills. You know, I think a lot of people might just say, I need someone who's, you know, as fast as me or as tough as me or something. But I really think there's something to having enough overlap in your background and your capabilities, but also having differences as well, and thinking through that as I'm, you know, pondering who would I want to tackle a project with. So I'm thinking through the strengths and weaknesses that, you know, I bring to the table and the other partner would as well. All right, do you have any thoughts on that, Buzz?
And so you don't have to be the exact same, but complementary could mean you're sharing skills. Like one person might be a really good navigator, while another person might be very experienced in the backcountry. And of course, a classic one is the so-called rope gun. You bring along someone who is really good at technical climbing.
Absolutely, yeah. And obviously, depending on the project, if you're doing something that involved technical terrain, having, well, both background, you know, background for the all the individuals is a helpful thing. Having someone who's really strong in that area is helpful as well. You know, reaching out to Luke, I have a quote here from Luke. He said, you know, having one person that's sort of pure energy, pure optimism, enthusiasm, and then, you know, if it's a two-person team, hopefully the other person is maybe realistic and willing to sit down and plan. That seems to work pretty well. If you had two people that were just optimistic but didn't know how to plan, that would be obviously disastrous. And then, you know, the other extreme too might be the wrong thing. So my projects have worked out well where there's been sort of a complement of energy, willingness to go along with anything, and then, you know, somebody who's willing to put more thought into the planning, the route, logistics, and whatnot.
Right. I like that. That's good. And what other aspects for a good partner are you seeing?
Well, so again, I'm going to kind of quote some of my good friends throughout this. And Buzz, I know you and I will dive into examples from our running and backcountry and canyoneering adventures. But, you know, being on like kind of the same wavelength with the project, I think is important. Like what is the thing motivating you to do it? You know, if you were on different, if one of you was just, you know, hell-bent on setting the FKT on, you know, whatever the route is, and the other is just sort of going along for the ride, that's obviously probably not going to work out. So I think just in those early discussions, like making sure you're both in it for the same reasons is probably a really important thing to look for.
Right, right. That's interesting, isn't it? If it's a goal, okay. That's interesting, because some people might just want to have a resume builder, as one might say, and other people are just inspired by the route itself and wanting to get out. I think that is kind of the same need. That's helpful to be on that same wavelength.
I totally agree. You know, Luke pointed out to me, he and along the lines of motivation, like, not only why are you inspired by the route, but once you are in it, you know, are you able to motivate the other person? And Luke brought up the fact that at one point, one particularly low point in Nolan's for him, that I made the statement then that, well, this is what you signed up for. And in hindsight, I feel kind of crappy saying that, but apparently that the way it came across to him was a positive thing, because I don't know how that lifted his spirits, but somehow it did. Somehow the way I brought that up was a helpful thing to him.
Right. Right. Motivation is interesting. Well, I think for myself, and you could give me feedback on this, I've done a lot of stuff with you, Peter Backwin, Andrew Skirka, some pretty strong people. And over the years, I'm definitely the weakest link aerobically and fitness wise. It didn't used to be like that, but I am now. And yet people still, I think, maybe I'm completely mistaken about this, I think people still like to go with me. So there are some other aspects here that are not necessarily based on pure fitness.
You're absolutely right, Buzz. No, you. I mean, I've definitely been a student of yours over the years and recognized that pretty early on that you went about things differently than me. And that's been a really healthy thing, actually. Yeah. So your approach to planning, to writing things down, to rehearsing, et cetera, it was really a source of me learning from you, which is a really cool thing. Now I sort of, you know, it's a arrow in my quiver now that I take to other projects, but you've certainly bring that to the table, a new cool approach to planning.
Ah, okay, good. Well, that's one of, and it comes in the complementary skills category then. Okay, all right. And some other things are, in terms of partner selection would be, you know, is this what's the level of commitment? Is someone willing to just, you know, go die on Everest at summit, or is someone want to kind of play it by ear, see how it goes and have a good time? You kind of want to get on the same wavelength before you start.
Absolutely, for sure. And I don't really know how to suggest people go about it other than just like conversations, you know, and, you know, touching base as you're sort of leading into this. Plus, it's a personality thing, right? You're going to know the type of person who's willing to give everything. But if one of you, yeah, was just super dedicated in their mind and the other was just taking it a step at a time, that clearly wouldn't work out. So it's important to really discuss that openly, I think, beforehand.
Right. And here's something, of course, I made this joke right at the start about talking about for 20 minutes about your bio, which one could talk for 20 minutes in which you would never appear on the podcast again if I tried that. That's that aspect of externalization. You know, some people really like to talk about it, really like media attention, and some people are a lot less so. So what do you think about that one?
You know, I was thinking a lot about that because that for me, it's been actually a point of, I don't know if contention is the right word, but my approach to many of the projects I've done in the past has been very quiet. I don't, you know, I've done things very personally motivated, and many of my friends either do, you know, projects like this professionally or they're athletes professionally. That brings with it, you know, a responsibility to socialize it, to publicize it. In some cases, I've had cameras come along, you know, due to commitments that partners have made. That's been really awkward for me, I have to admit. And I appreciate my partners reaching out early and saying, hey, Jared, you know, there's this thing, there's a camera crew, they need to be involved. Are you okay with that, right? And you know, ultimately I was, but that is something really worth discussing up front, because especially, you know, today's athletes with commitments to companies and sponsors, like that becomes part of it, right? Is you are a conduit for reports and attention and stories and whatnot. And if the other person in the team or other people in the team are not on that page, that could be problematic. So it's important to just hit that head on and not have it be something that comes up at the tail end.
That's good. I like it. So this is almost going into the part two of this, the planning, communicating during the lead up phase where you discuss these things in advance.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, once you've sort of decided in your mind on who you want to team up with and making sure all those initial things we talked about are in line, then comes the planning phase, right? And there's so much work that happens from that initial idea or inception up to the day you're at the starting line, so to speak. It's funny, I like thinking through this, preparing for this podcast, there's almost these really phases, right? From excitement to actually nailing down a date to eventually making travel arrangements, flights, hotels, whatever. It's really, those phases are actually really important, especially for me and others who have, you know, jobs and families and whatnot. Making sure that all parties involved have a similar level of sort of commitment to the project is really important. I have had projects I've sort of been in the early stages of planning with people who are like not similarly, you know, of a complicated life to me. And I've had them bail out at last minute, you know. That's really frustrating, right? For somebody, for me, like free time is, you know, very valuable. So at any rate, yeah, making sure you walk through that level of commitment and you're on the same page is a really important thing.
And well, there's commitment and there's time. And the old saying is, if you want to get something done, ask a busy person to do it. And pardon me, but I certainly remember sleeping at the West Rim trailhead before a 24-hour long project. And at midnight, you show up. And it's not like you were just blowing it off. It wasn't that at all. You were totally committed to it. But you got off work at 5 or 6 p.m. in Salt Lake City and drove down to Zion National Park and didn't get there till 11 or 12 at night. So you were committed, but you also had a lot of things on your schedule.
Yeah, I was committed, and I appreciate that you sort of had confidence that I would come through. I think the scenario you described has probably happened more than a couple of times, actually. You know, looking back on that, I probably would say, man, be cautious of that guy, Jared. You know, he seems to show up at the last possible second. Thankfully, it's worked out, but that's, you know, how my life said, you know, tends to operate. But that said, I think in addition to the project, it's what I've learned is it's really good to discuss the activities and the other part, you know, the other partners' lives leading up to this too, right? For example, I went out, I'll use a JMT example. Ty Adrani and I went out and did that. He was literally putting on a race, Vaquero Loco, that he puts on in his home state there, and finished up the race, packed up, and then jumped on a plane the next day. And that sort of seemed like a good way to make it happen. In hindsight, looking at that, like, that was problematic. You know, like, he was in a super stressed, sleep deprived mode right from the get go. Not a good sign of success. So, you know, and yeah, right. Buzz, I've been super guilty of that, like, cramming in every, you know, last possible thing leading up to a project. So thanks for working with me on that.
Well, fortunately, you do very well on little sleep. So it definitely always worked out. Anyone else?
You know, after tons of years of doing this, I like to think I'm getting a little bit better at thinking about the time, you know, the day before and after, actually. I went up to run a race, Gary Robbins race up in Canada, and it was fun to, like, stage a family trip the week before. I kind of went into it relaxed and calm, and I wasn't rushing out of work right before. Those actually are a big deal, especially for really big projects, is, you know, thinking through the activities leading up to the project.
So one could say your advice now is based on personal experience.
Most of my advice is based on failure, my own personal failures. So it's probably really good advice.
Yeah. Let's get, what about how one is feeling? Like, you can get sick. You can not feel good just days in advance. Have you ever had that come up?
I have. Yeah. In fact, I've had at least two projects that really stand out in my mind where I felt very committed, you know, to the point where I didn't really voice, I probably shouldn't start this based on, you know, my state of health, physical health, like going into projects, and I've paid the price dearly. If I could back up on a few projects like that, I would sort of hope that my partners in these cases would have said, hey, I get it. You know, you're not doing well for whatever reason, you're sick, or another time. And I've made the wrong decision there on two key projects. One was the JMT, that same project I mentioned with Ty, where he had sort of suboptimal, you know, conditions leading up to it, as did I. I kind of entered the thing sick. I had a respiratory issue, and it was, the whole thing was kind of a disaster because of it. I'd like to think if we were to do the same thing again, we'd both say, hey, you know, it's not in the cards this year. Let's try another year. But yeah, so voicing that.
Yeah, so it's okay to check in just even one day in advance and possibly bail right there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and like, to a failure, to a really unhealthy point, I go into these projects and my mind totally committed, and I haven't in certain cases had the maturity to say, hey, look, it's not in the cards for me today, and back out. I've not done that. I think I would take a different approach going forward, but I recommend people have that honest conversation. You know, if I had a big project with you and you weren't feeling well the day before it and voiced that, I'd listen to you and I'd be okay with it, you know? So I encourage people to have that type of discussion up till, like, literally the night before, or the morning of, whatever.
Good call. Well, sticking with the planning, the leading up phase here, I think one thing that you like to do now, I don't think you used to like to do it, is rehearse it. You'll go through the crux moves, the crux equipment, things that need to be done in advance.
Yeah, I mean, best case scenario, right? You have the time to put in several rehearsal episodes. In some cases, and for some projects, especially ones you and I have done that are really, you know, involve like kind of life or death situations. If you screw up, you know, it's a life or death. It's essential that you rehearse things. And I guess referencing the trifecta, a link up of three canyons in Zion that me, you, and Ryan McDermott did, I think we were all committed to that idea that if we weren't able to put in the time, we wouldn't even try it. And that was without doubt the right call for that project.
That's a very good recollection. We indeed said that. We said, let's do this if.
Yep.
We really put that if. We have to do all three canyons individually in advance, and then we will do all three in one day.
Yeah, and you know, had we not done that and we were there in the mode trying to on-site it and, you know, move quickly on terrain with multiple rappels and kind of tricky logistics, rope work and whatnot, I mean, it easily could have, you know, gone into the unsafe territory. So our rehearsals for that were critical.
May I remind you of something?
Please.
We actually didn't do that.
Really?
Yeah, the three hardest. These are the three biggest canyons in Zion National Park, which are Heaps, Imlay, and Kolob. We did Heaps, and of course, we still have the fastest time on that. This is, 10 years later? We certainly still have the fastest time on Imlay. And then we went to do Kolob, and I don't think we did it.
Well, we had done it in the past. You're right. Okay, good point. Fair correction. Thank you.
We had done it in the past. We said, we don't need to do this. We had done this in the past. We got this one. So then we went and did the trifecta. We had our spreadsheet. Our planning was just perfect. And we were ticking all the points all along the entire spreadsheet, which, as you said, was a terrific amount of logistics. And we pulled down the rope on the very last rappel of the day, right as the sun went down and it got dark. All we had to do is hike out.
Okay, I stand corrected. Thank you, Buzz. You're right. We put emphasis on the two biggest, hardest canyons. We rehearsed those. Consequently, they both went flawlessly. And you're right. We screwed up the tail end, the easy part, the exit.
The exit. We were done with all technical, and we blew the exit.
Yeah. No. Okay. You're right. I agree. However, so let this be an example, right? The portion of the trip that we had rehearsed did go very well, and it could easily have not gone well. So,
right.
Yep.
Right. So that's a very good example, because we are providing an example of how to do it and how not to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess to that point, right, that one takeaway could be don't overlook the seemingly simple things, right? When we were down there, I believe we made several trips down there. We should have rehearsed the exit, right? The no-brainer part of the course.
Right. Yep. Okay. Well, no one's still been able to better our time. So someone listened to this podcast, they could, right? They could listen to this podcast, go down to Zion National Park and do the Zion trifecta better than we did it, if they listen carefully to this podcast.
Absolutely. We should point out, Buzz, that objective is a bit of an extension, a bit of a tangential sport from ultra running.
It is. That's true. Okay. So getting back on that one, there's Nolans. You've done Nolans three times.
Yes. And so I guess in our last examples, you know, for that type of project, very risky project, it was simply, at least for the two canyons of the three, we were all committed to only doing the project if we had rehearsed them. We should have rehearsed 100%. Many of the things I've done purely out of life circumstances, I have not had the luxury to rehearse. And so in that scenario, you know, it's a totally different upfront work, right? It's tons of planning. You have to be okay. Hopefully one or more of you are kind of drawn to the planning side of things, but, you know, do as much planning as you possibly can remotely, read as many reports as you can, map as best you can. But then because of that uncertainty, be okay with the inevitable, you know, curveballs that's going to throw at you. And that's been a lot of things I've done, including, you know, my very first Nolans for sure. And then the subsequent ones that I've gone back and done, I haven't gone out there and spent, you know, weeks acclimating and rehearsing the whole route. So all three of them have been real learning experiences for me.
Well, sticking with the the partnership theme and the importance of the lead up phase, communicating. We've just gone through a lot of aspects of that, but there's possibly a few more. You just mentioned one, acclimatization. Make sure that both partners are putting in the work in advance so they're prepared.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Nolan's is a great example. Most projects in the high mountains in Colorado are going to bring that component. I had done that with Gary Robbins, who lived in North Vancouver, so sea level. And, you know, he recognized that was going to be a challenge for him. He had didn't have the luxury of spending a lot of time at altitude. So anyway, he sort of arranged his summer around it. He actually, I believe, went out to Hard Rock a week or two before, paced someone, spent time at altitude. So he put together a plan that worked for him, given that that would be a challenge he'd be facing coming from sea level. So that's a
key. So Gary did the work.
Gary did the work, yeah. And then, he said it was a family trip, I believe we arranged beforehand, there was a week or at least like 5 days that I was out there. I think he was out there a little bit longer, but spent time kind of working his way up in altitude. And, we had issues in Nolens, but they weren't altitude related. So, risk mitigated, with what he had done beforehand.
Now your last aspect of the partnerships is still communication, but this is while you're in the project. This is executing. This is things like a proper balance of communication, sharing your issues and staying in touch.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it's a fine line and a real, something you need to sort out, right? The right amount of communication. I think many of us if you have a background in ultra running, are just used to, we've sort of grown up with just a put your head down and deal with anything and don't talk about it mentality, right? I mean, oftentimes that trait does really well in hard races. That can also really work against you. If you're teaming up with somebody and both of you are just, grunting through whatever challenge you're facing and not talking about it. Gary and I, in this example, I think we just inherently work really well in terms of we both internalize the struggles that we're facing very well. We hardly talked about anything the first time we were at Barclay together. And yet on the flip side, when he and I did Nolens together, he made it a point to keep me in the loop on things he was dealing with. Like I had an example that came to mind of, halfway through, he says something like, "Hey, Jared, just so you know, I've got this issue going on. This is hurting me. I'm going to take 200 milligrams of ibuprofen. I just want you to be aware of that." And I was like, wow, that's so cool. That it sort of.
And so rather than feeling that he was just kind of being wussy, you were impressed. You appreciated the fact that he shared what he was doing.
I was. I mean, honestly, if not very many partners in my past experience had done something like that. So it was a little tiny thing, but it stood out to me. And quite frankly, replaying it in my mind prior to this podcast, what it did for me was it opened up the door for me to communicate to him perhaps more than I would have in the past. And that proved really beneficial. Fast forward in that Nolens project of ours, we had a really bad weather episode of 12 plus hours. We were both really suffering. We were nearly hypothermic. And thankfully we both voiced that we had sort of, come up on a really dangerous mode and we bailed, we pulled the plug. And I have to think that sort of his bringing up this seemingly minor thing early on sort of told me, sent the message to me that I need to communicate back to him as well, which we did. I'm really sort of proud of the fact that we both, discussed that, made the right call to bail. Thankfully, we unbailed later, got back on route and finished the thing. But I find great satisfaction in the fact that we both brought that up. We talked about it. We made the right call. We got out of there when we were both in an unsafe mode. Had we not done that, if we were just two, internalizing kind of people, we could have just forged on ahead and it had a really bad situation. So,
well, this is fascinating because there's a balance here, isn't there? In that you got to go hard, otherwise you're not going to get very far. You have to be somewhat driven, not only just fit, but you have to be somewhat driven. And yet there has to be a balance to think about it. And I think, Jared, what you're saying is, and talk about it so everyone, where it's two, three, or four, are involved share what they're thinking, what they're feeling, and possibly no group think. So best decisions are made when each individual is participating in the decision-making process. Yeah.
You know, I've learned so much from you over the years. I've learned a lot from Gary, and I actually thankfully jumped on a call with him before this to just get his perspective on some of the things we've done in the past. And he brought this up. I said, Gary, why was it important for you to pause and tell me about, you know, why you were feeling the way you were and that you were taking a little bit of ibuprofen? He said this, and this is probably a really important thing to share with people. I guess years ago, he used to do adventure racing or expedition racing. And, you know, had some early challenges with the team dynamics. I believe it was 2010, one of their friends died, passed away in the context of the expedition race. And so he and the other people on the team, they were debriefing days after, playing through the scenario about why their friend had passed away, why their friend died. And so he said, Jared, I think the reason I reached out to you, the reason I found it important to tell you that was it kind of all started with that episode where the team, we all agreed in that debrief, had we taken the time to pause and think through things and voice any of the things we were uncomfortable with, that might not have happened. I might not have lost my friend. And so Gary's sort of taken that now to projects like Nolan's that he did with me. He told me on his group runs with multiple people, he literally pauses the whole group and says, all of us here, you know, it's important. If something's on your mind, if you're uncomfortable, talk about it. I really love that. It's like such a mature way to approach group projects.
And if I'm going to make a generalization here, if I may, I think sometimes when males get together, that falls away. I like to think, maybe I'm being totally incorrect, that if there's one or more females in the group, there's a little more process involved. But sometimes all males can kind of get the charge going and not think through things carefully.
I completely agree. I mean, I haven't tackled any really big projects with women, but clearly my wife has proven to me that women are far more rational and logical. I think an all-male team probably suffers from that even more, just the notion of, you know, don't talk about it, deal with it kind of thing. And that can lead to very dangerous situations.
19 years ago, Peter and I went after the Colorado Trail, set an early FKT on that, and we made a rule. I think we did a good job going through some of these examples you're giving, Jared, of how to handle it. And one of our stated conscious rules was, if someone questions the route, the other person stops and considers it. Because as you said, there's a tendency to say, wait, is this the right way to go? And the other person says, yeah, sure, right? You just blow through it. You blow through it. And then if you make a mistake, you're losing 30 minutes or an hour. Well, if you take 30 seconds to check the map, you can save that half an hour. And so we made a conscious rule. If any one of us said, are we sure we're going in the right direction? The other person would automatically stop and consider that question carefully.
Yeah, I think it's so good. It's so good and sort of mature to like have that rule at the outset of a project. And what's funny to me, Buzz, is you set that rule with Peter many years ago. And then in projects with me, we didn't really adhere to that rule. We've screwed things up where if we had paused for 30 seconds, we would have made better decisions.
Well, that exit from Colob Canyon is a good bad example, isn't it?
Yeah.
Boy, that was an odd thing. We didn't stick together. This is a good bad example, isn't it?
It's a good bad example. Yeah, but it all turned out fine. No one got hurt. But if we had paused for 30 seconds, we would have, in this case, you know, finished, you know, out a couple hours faster, something like that, right?
Right.
Yeah. You know, one other thought, Buzz, to your point about questioning the route is leading up to the project, maybe like the day before, the day of, morning of, whatever, to sit down and truly walk through the route. And, you know, I usually do that with maps in front of me, maybe even Google Earth or something, walk through the logistics so that at least sort of the average understanding among the group of the route is higher one problem, I tend to really jump in and geek out on the mapping and timetables and all that. One sort of negative byproduct of that oftentimes is that the people that I'm with assume that I have it all figured out, right? They don't do any homework. And that's bit me too. So I think it's a really good thing to truly walk through as best you can so everybody has a clear understanding of the route, key, you know, decision points, turning points, et cetera, and even, you know, bailing options. So that's something I need to do better at going forward is elevating the level of understanding of the group, of the route.
Get everyone involved. So everyone involved is really helpful. Now, if there's a commercial trip, there's a leader, there's a guide, but generally speaking, and for FKT projects, everyone's in it together.
Yeah. Yeah. But so maybe one thing to look out for is if someone is the dominant, you know, guide, orienteer, map person, that can actually hurt you, right? Because that person, myself included, have made plenty of navigational errors. So if everyone knows enough to be able to pause and question the route, like you and Peter talked about, that's a really healthy thing.
Good point. Well, here's another aspect of the execution phase in communication is the relative strengths. So Gary Robbins mentioned AR, adventure racing, which I've done a little bit myself, and part of the style of AR sometimes is the bungee cord.
Yeah.
You never see it in a regular race, but in AR on the bike, there's even gear for this, attach a bungee cord from the strong cyclist to weak cyclist and help them up a hill. That is completely fair. I think that's very reasonable. I like the teamwork aspect, but some people, oh no, you can't do that. And then of course in canyoneering, this is very, very well accepted. It's considered very good technique, the partner assist,
yeah.
Right? So in climbing, it's not considered good, but in canyoneering, it's actually considered high level, or you might just stand on someone's shoulders. You might use each other's bodies to get over something, or possibly the toe.
Yeah.
But I think this comes back around, not just the technique, to acknowledging strengths and weaknesses, because you're going to finish as a team. And that's something that AR really pioneered. You know, if you got a four person team, and if one person is weak, all three people are weak. You're only going fast to the slowest person. So it might be time to offload some weight.
You know, that was one thing that, Me, you, Ryan have done really well in a, you know, a really easy way to spread that load out is with weight, right? Because with canyoneering, you have so much crap with you, ropes and wetsuits and dry bags and all sorts of junk. So I think you need to put your egos aside. And if someone's struggling, whoever it is in the back who's working harder, take 10 pounds off, 15, 20 pounds and put it on the person in the front, right? Average it out. And you can do that for things that involve a lot of weight. And to your point too, once in the canyon, canyoneering is a fascinating event in the sense that you can really, the three of you use three bodies to actually get over up and over obstacles efficiently. But I think the whole spreading out of gear thing is an important thing. And you were always really good at that, Buzz. You would say something like, you know, Jared, you're moving a little stronger than me, and so here's 10 pounds. I always thought that was cool. But it worked. I mean, it was the right call, you know, in that scenario.
Well, good. Thanks for that feedback. We've never talked about that. We did do that. So I appreciate you confirming that was, you were just fine with that, because we definitely did that.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, you didn't hesitate at all.
And of course, there's that.
I had a moment of pause of like, huh, okay. But yeah, this makes complete sense. All right.
Yeah. Well, we carried three ropes. We carried a 200, a 100, and a 50. And you carried the 200. You know, and so it was, it helped.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think people might hesitate, you know, mostly out of ego to say, hey, I am struggling maybe more than you. Here's how we might equalize things a little bit. And I think from an overall efficiency standpoint, being quick to, you know, that goes back to the whole picking your partner, right? Like if I'm struggling and Luke is really strong, you know, one, he can read me and figure out ways to take up the slack, and, you know, vice versa. So that whole set the ego aside, spread gear out, and even the tow rope, which I've never really employed, but it makes a lot of sense. It's awesome, actually, if the team works well enough that you can jump to those tactics as a way to become more efficient.
Okay, the bottom line here is it's a team. In an FKT project, it's a team. You're out there in the backcountry, probably. And so the ethical style is a little different. It becomes more like an adventure race. It becomes more like mountaineering, where getting everyone home at the same time safely is very good ethics. And to kind of maintain this purity of style isn't good ethics. It's kind of a little more ego-driven. All right. Well, this is good, Jared. I think we identified just on an overall level that the choice of a partner and working as a good team is one of the key aspects of both safety and success. And you start off by saying enjoyment. So what the heck? We're out here to have fun. And just to recap, you mentioned start with a selection. You know, who complements your skills, be on the same wavelength in terms of everything from publicity to how committed you are. Secondly, you talked about communicating during the planning phase. You're a big planner. So go through the whole thing in advance and make sure you're on the same wavelength and you're both dialed. And lastly, you talked about communication while you're executing the project. That was good, Jared. It's funny. Everyone who's listening to this knows these things to be the case, but it's not talked about that often.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was really fun to talk about it. You know, I realize so much of the motions that we discussed here are things that we all just sort of learn over time, but then never really formalize as an important part of the project, right? And yet it's, boy, if you fail at any one stage in this, you know, the partner, the planning, execution, et cetera, like the whole thing can go awry. So it's kind of fun to dive into the mechanics of what makes, you know, a partner-based project successful. And it was fun for me to rethink it, like to go through and actually write a few things down to talk to friends. I've never really done good debriefs right after a project, so it was fun to go revisit some of the big projects with friends of mine. And most importantly, I hope people, you know, learn from what we've talked about.
Right. I'm going to sum up with one overarching aspect, and I'll let you do the same before we sign off. One thing that worked for me early on is good judgment. An example of that was when I first did something with Peter. We ran over from Boulder to Winter Park, Colorado in October, and it snowed overnight. And Peter and I started back up the next day to run back over the Continental Divide. We got up to Timberline and it was snowing hard. It was a whiteout conditions and we were of course scantily clad and we had never done anything before. So there's that two males together, you know what I mean? And yeah, that could be trouble. And I looked at this and I said, I think we ought to go back. What do you think? And he said, yeah, I think we ought to go back. And we turned around. We didn't blink. There is no ego. We had a strong push. We were both very fit. We were both committed. And yet when it was time to pull the plug, both of us did it and we didn't think twice about it. We had to go all the way back down and hitchhike all the way back around to Boulder. And right then and there, I realized I'd be willing to do another project with Peter, not because he was super strong, which he is, but because he had good judgment and I could be sustainably safe with him.
Yeah, that's beautiful closing thought there, Buzz.
Well, do you have one?
You know, I'll just harp on the whole communication thing because it's maybe a weakness of mine, like, and something I feel like I've learned so much from my partners, you being a key person in terms of teaching me lessons. You know, I think the very best endurance kind of projects happen when people are able to communicate almost the way you would in a marriage, like super open, super honest, put the ego aside in all stages from the very beginning, from when you're enthusiastic about the idea all the way through when you're actually executing it. And for me, like being able to reflect on a partner who has done that, you know, is just so cool. And makes me, you know, really solidify the fact that I want to pursue other projects with this person, and knowing that it'll be safe too, right? I mean, ultimately, to the point you've made already, like that's the goal, is to come back alive, right? And it's just such an important thing, being able to actually talk through things from the beginning stage all the way through the end. And, you know, shouldn't be overlooked. It's not just about finding someone of similar horsepower, similar results in races, but building these partnerships. And in the end, you know, yeah, I went and did, you know, Project XYZ with various friends, but those are true people that mean so much to me now, because we were able to tackle a project and discuss and really understand each other. They're the most meaningful relationships that have come out of, you know, a project like Nolan's or something, right? These are like really valuable relationships, and that's such a fun part of the sport to me, you know? So
the relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully people are able to realize from this podcast that there's so much to the planning and the partnership part of it, that they can learn a few things from this.
And I hope that you and I get to do something else together this spring.
Absolutely. Yep. Well, you're on that list, Buzz, where when you call and say, I want to go do something, I pretty much put just about anything aside to make it happen because of all the experience. I know we're going to plan it out. I know it's going to work out. I know we'll be safe, et cetera. So yes,
I'm still on the list. That's great. I'm so happy to hear that. I was, you know, I'm getting old. I'm afraid I might have fallen off that list.
You're on the list.
Excellent. Jared, you are our first 3-time podcast guest. I thank you very much. For listeners who like hearing Jared's great information, go back to number 30. And I think number 61 also is with Jared Campbell. And hopefully, well, there's more to come. And for the listeners, if you're liking this, please go to iTunes and review it. Give us however many stars that you might like, particularly if the number rhymes with live. And give us a little review, because we appreciate it very much and hope to keep bringing these back to you. Thanks again, Jared.
Thank you, Buzz.